Parents be warned, this message might contain content which is unsuitable for younger listeners. Your discretion is advised.
Today's message is on Genesis chapter 22, verses 20 through 24. The context for this sermon and the sermon following it on Genesis chapter 23 is set up for the story of Isaac and Rebekah. Obviously, Isaac and his marriage to Rebekah is going to be a very important part of the book of Genesis, moving the story forward. And so the next two chapters are going to get us there. Today, we are going to be focusing on Rebekah's lineage. Like I say, as it is recorded in Genesis chapter 22. And this will raise some interesting questions for us about incest and concubinage, and so we will address those thoroughly. So let's go ahead and read the passage from the NIV. Sometime later, Abraham was told, Milcah is also a mother. She has borne sons to your brother Nahor. Uz the firstborn, Buz his brother, Kemuel the father of Aram, Kesed, Hazo, Pildash, Jidlaf, and Bethuel. Bethuel became the father of Rebekah. Milcah bore these eight sons to Abraham's brother Nahor. His concubine, whose name was Reuma, also had sons, Teba, Gaham, Tahash, and Makah. So then that is the lineage on the other side of the family here. So in verse 20, we read that Milcah has borne a son to Nahor. Now, we haven't seen either of these characters since chapter 11. So just a refresher, Nahor is Abraham's brother, and he left him behind in Haran when he and Lot traveled to Canaan. So Abraham and Lot came to Canaan. They left brother Nahor behind in Haran, and Nahor is married to his niece, Milcah. Okay, and so that is also Abraham's niece. Born to their other brother who had already died by that point. So now we find that Milcah has eight sons. The important one that we need to know about is Bethuel, because Bethuel is the father of Rebekah, and spoiler alert, I've already told you, she's going to be given in marriage to Isaac, and that, of course, is why we need to know about his lineage from this chapter. Now, let's talk a little bit about incest. Practically all of the early marriages in the Bible are to near relatives. When I say near relatives, I mean second degree relatives. Abraham takes his half-sister, Sarai. This perhaps is not second degree, first and a half degree. I'm not sure exactly how that would work. Notably, she had trouble conceiving. I don't know if that was owing to the fact that she was married to her half-brother. Perhaps there was some sort of genetic problem there. Nahor, we just saw, has taken his niece Milcah as a wife. Isaac is going to be taking his first cousin once removed, Rebekah, as a wife. And Jacob, we're going to see later on, will take his cousins Leah and Rachel as wives. Rachel also had difficulty conceiving. There is no first-degree, full-on incest in the book of Genesis. We have no parent-child relationships. We have no full siblings who are marrying each other. But we do have this second-degree, near-relative thing going on. That would not ordinarily be called incest. It's not incest proper. It's just marriages to close relatives. Now, during the times described in Genesis, there was no moral component to intrafamilial marriages because God had not yet said anything about intrafamilial marriages. Now, since that time, God's laws have placed a limit on such relations, forbidding specifically parent-child relations, full and half-sibling relations, grandparent-grandchild relations, and nephew-aunt relations, but not specifically uncle-niece relations. So those are basically the bounds of what is unacceptable in terms of incest according to the Bible. But like I say, those rules were not in place at this time. There were no real rules. People could simply do whatever they wanted. I suppose that if someone had decided to marry their child at this point, there would be no moral component to it because, well, God didn't say not to. So I suppose they could do whatever they want. It wouldn't be wise and would probably have some deleterious genetic effects. But regardless, there was no specific rule against it, so it was not yet morally wrong. It was not yet disobedient to God. Now, for Abraham to marry Sarai today would have been wrong because God has prohibited half-sibling relationships. But you will notice that the other relationships, an uncle taking a niece, a first cousin, or marrying a first cousin once removed, or marrying a first cousin, those things are not spoken against in the Bible. So Abraham would have a moral problem after the law was given, but the others would not. So these are not necessarily bad marriages. They may not be something that are cultural to Americans today, but they're not necessarily immoral in any way. Now, we should suppose that all marriages between second-degree relatives, for instance, first cousins, are still not immoral today, because there's no moral component in the scriptures which makes that wrong. There's no command from God, there's no thou shalt not concerning marriages to cousins. Now, marrying one's first cousin may not be ideal, because there is a possibility of deleterious genetic effects on the offspring, but the odds of having these problems is significantly low at the second degree level. So if a first cousin marries a first cousin, their offspring are about twice as likely to have some kind of genetic defect, but the odds of that is still very low. The odd is it's something like 7%, a 7% chance of a child having some sort of birth defect because of the cousin marriage. So it's not nearly the same as marrying a sibling or something like that. It's not significantly dangerous. Now, there is an increased chance. It's perhaps not ideal to marry a cousin, but you should not be afraid for your children if you were to marry your cousin. Now, some people would doubt me, and if you do doubt me, we have a link to a story in the New York Times, which you will be able to find in the library once you have completed this sermon and answered its trivia question correctly. That article will appear for you. Now, I still do not recommend marrying your cousin, because you can probably do better. There's no real reason to put your child at a risk of, there's no reason to double the risk of having a genetic disorder with your cousin if you could just marry someone else who would be better. So, you know, look into that. Now, if you're madly in love with your cousin, I won't stop you. That's up to you. Now, the question of genetic disorders may have been a moot point in Abraham's case, because Abraham was so much closer to the creation. The human genome suffers mutations over time, and such mutations are the cause of genetic disorders. Now, generally speaking, a disorder only passes to a child if both parents carry a gene for the disorder. So the danger in marrying a cousin is that since both parents come from the same genetic stock, they increase the likelihood that they are both carriers for the same deleterious genetic disorder and could pass it on to the children. Now, because these unhealthy genes come over time with mutations, Abraham and his family were less likely to have bad genes because they had fewer mutations, having been closer to the creation when things were created good. So the case in point is that marrying a sibling in Abraham's time was probably much less dangerous than it is today. So while God has warned us for our own good in his law against doing such things in Abraham's time, maybe you could just get away with it and it wasn't a problem. In any case, I certainly don't recommend that you marry your sibling today. And as a matter of fact, I would say that if you married your sibling today, it would be null and void, not a real marriage. Moving on to concubinage. We read that Nahor had his wife Milcah, and also that he had a concubine named Reuma. Now, Reuma is the first concubine in the Bible, so we might as well talk about them now. The word concubine in English comes from the Latin concubinatus, which, according to InterVarsity Press's new Bible dictionary, describes a state of lying together. A Roman concubine was essentially a long-term extramarital affair, or the partner in a long-term extramarital affair. And the children of such relationships, again, according to the New Bible Dictionary, were considered bastards and not granted citizenship. Now, the Hebrew word that we're using concubine to translate is pilagesh. Pilagesh is the Hebrew word. And the relationship it describes is somewhat unclear. Now, it is obviously a sexual relationship. We see here that Reuma has borne children for Nahor. So this is obviously a sexual relationship, but it is unclear in my mind how a pilagesh is different from a wife. So let's discuss. We know that the Hebrews took multiple wives. King Solomon, for instance, had 300 wives and concubines in addition to those. So a concubine isn't just an extra wife. One could take multiple wives without those wives being called concubines, and the concubines were called something else. So there is a distinction between concubines and wives. What is the distinction, though? We might guess, and many would say that this is simply the case, but we might guess that a concubine was a slave who was used for sexual pleasure. Not really a wife so much as just a slave who is being used. But Hagar was a slave, and she was given to Abraham not as a concubine, but as a wife. So if Sarah had simply wanted him to have offspring by the slave, then why isn't she considered a concubine? It's not entirely clear. And in any case, we might wonder what the difference is between a slave and a wife to begin with. I know that doesn't really sound very nice, but in this time, a wife was essentially purchased for a bride price, much the same way as a slave was purchased. And a wife was not free to leave, like wives of today suppose that they are. She wasn't free to leave, and she was required to submit to her husband. Well, the same would be said of a slave. A slave would be purchased, would not be free to leave, and would be required to submit. And if slaves could be used for sex and wives could be used for sex, it starts to become a little bit blurry as to exactly what the difference would be there anyway, if we said that a concubine was just a slave used for sex. We might guess that a concubine is a partner in an informal relationship, that a wife has some sort of formality to it, but a concubine is just sleeping around. But we do recognize that there is some formality to concubinage. According to Solomon in 2 Kings, taking a former king's concubine is tantamount to taking the throne. So seemingly there's something official there. We might conclude that a concubine is just a wife of a lower status. The difference between a concubine and a wife appears to be a difference of attitude more than of any tangible definitive. If you have bought a girl as a slave and you view her as a slave and you start using her for sex, she's your concubine. If there is a free woman and you marry her as a wife and then use her as a slave, she's a wife. There's not much of a difference in the specifics, but there is perhaps a difference in the attitude. So concubinage, when you see it, it would be my mindset to just think of it as more wives with an attitude. So in conclusion, Nahor married his niece and kept a concubine. His daughter, or his granddaughter, was Rebekah. And going forward, that's what you need to know.
For those of you who might be listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.